Welcome to another exciting episode of the NIDS View, a weekly show of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies, where we are advancing peace, promoting stability, and helping you to think deterrence. Each week, we will discuss and analyze a recent topic and provide insight to how it affects our national deterrence. The view of the hosts and guests are their own. We hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome back to another great episode of the NIDS View, where we proudly wear our Kansas City Chiefs gear, regardless of who wins the Super Bowl, because we're, of course, recording this before it. The Super Bowl takes place, but I, as a loyal Kansas City Chiefs fan, I'm going to be proud to wear this Chiefs gear regardless of whether we win or lose. So
now, Adam, this isn't to say that our loyal Philadelphia Eagles fans should still continue to listen, correct?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, because Jim is he's a Pittsburgh fan, so I guess that's another that's another detractor for Jim. He's not an Eagles fan.
The Eagles are my emergency backup team, okay? Okay. I've been relying on them a lot recently, by the way. Just put it that way.
So now that we've set our, required pro-Chiefs statements and accepted that people also like the Eagles, then I guess we'll go ahead and turn to our topic for today. Of course, I'm still Adam Lowther, a Chiefs fan, joined by Curtis McGiffin and Jim Petrosky,
who's not a Chiefs fan,
a backup Eagles fan. Although I do, I really like Jalen Hurts. He played at Alabama. He played in a national title game for us. So, I'm a big Jalen fan. And Saquon Barkley had a great year, so you got to give him his props. So the Eagles, it's going to be a great game. Or I guess by the time this comes out, it will have been a great game. But, Curtis and Kirk Fancher wrote a great article that you can read at Global Security Review. And the article, which was titled "Peace Through Strength, Enhancing America's Nuclear Deterrence Today," I tell you what, Curtis, you wrote the thing. So why don't you give us sort of the summary and the impetus behind the article?
I just want to say you called it the thing. Curtis, it's much better than the thing. It's a great article. So I just want to let our audience know it's more than a thing.
Well, I want to thank my co-author, Kirk Fancher. It's not often that two retired colonels can put their pointy heads together and write an article that's at about 1,000 words. We're usually overspoken, overworded, and over our time. So we're going to continue to keep pressing forward. I want to thank you, Adam, for giving us an opportunity. A little shameless marketing here. We write the piece, then we talk about the piece, and I think this is a great opportunity to do so. So thanks. And so for our listeners out there, I encourage you to look it up. So the premise of this article really is to sort of carry on. Our 29th Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, is now in place, and he has been very forward in his ideas about what he wants to do is to sort of execute the president's goals and mission sets in here. And he laid out three guiding principles, right? One was to restore the warrior ethos in everything we do. The second was to rebuild the military. And third was to reestablish deterrence. So what's very interesting about this is that third thing, right? Is that somehow deterrence needs to be reestablished in the minds of the new administration. I don't disagree with that, but I'm just pointing it out. And that those three things sort of begin to form the foundation of this idea of peace through strength. And we know peace through strength was one of Ronald Reagan's sort of nomenclatures, and Trump knows, President Trump knows to borrow great things, and make good use of them, and that was a great term, and that he just definitely wants to carry that through. And I think what's interesting about peace through strength, which was really about, it's sort of the accumulation and displaying of various forms of national power, in this case, the military power, to create a favorable international environment. And generally one that's, I think, of peace and stability, right? That's sort of the peace through strength. And it very much aligns with our NIDS philosophy and mission set as well. So that's why I thought that the new philosophies of the new philosophies of the new administration made so much sense to us, and that's why we needed to write about it. And so the idea here is that we've got to do a number of things to deal with these adversaries who are moving at breakneck speed, and we're still having some issues with our own modernization. And I've, again, a broken record, I'll speak about it at almost every podcast. We're delayed in our modernization. We're behind in almost every program. And I argue partially because we don't make it a priority. And many people can argue with me about whether or not we are or aren't making it a priority. My personal opinion is we are not making it a national priority, and this is why we're falling behind. And what's happening is that as we fall behind in the modernization process, which, by the way, was selected 15 years ago based on a world that is very different than it is today. Would you not agree with me there, Adam?
It was different.
A lot different than it is today. And so, you know, you and I, when we wrote Dynamic Parity, we really sort of embraced the idea that that is probably inadequate. It is the bare minimum, but we need to do more. And my argument, Kirk and I's argument in this piece here really is that we now have to deal with an interim. There's been so much delay and so much sort of political bickering about whether or not we should add certain capabilities that we've now sort of created a bathtub in our deterrence capabilities. And so we've got to do a few things, step out and do a few things that are going to cost some money, but can actually be done to sort of bolster the intermediate time frame, the sort of the now through 2035 kind of time frame, because we need to deter now. Not even just as much as we have to deter, you know, 15 years from now, but the risks are today and tomorrow, not as much 10 or 15 years from now. A lot can change. A lot changed in the last 15 years. So we lay out a handful of different ideas that if you desire, we can go through and sort of just things that we can do that are very near and dear, and we can kind of argue those as to whether or not they make any sense.
So I want to take issue with not necessarily with what you want to do, but the feasibility of it.
Sure.
But before I do that, you got to lay out what you want to do. So why don't you do that? And then I'll take issue with it.
All right. Well, I put out that there's I keep apologizing to Kirk and my co-author here. We put out that we've got to really deal with our collaborative adversary and what they mean, and we've got to up our numbers. And we really just sort of call in. And even towards the end of the Biden administration, the nuclear officials who were dealing with these things. Dr. Vipin Narang and others, you know, they sort of started coming around to say we might need more, and these things mattered. So we laid out some ideas here of what we could do, and the first thing we argued is that we've got to come out and basically suspend the New START treaty ourselves. That's sort of the first thing you've got to do if you're going to start upping the numbers. And now people will say, well, this is, you know, problematic. But I think the reality here is the Russians have already suspended it. We know that. And there was a report that came out just in January of 2025, right before the inauguration, from the Secretary of State that basically told Congress in an unclassified format that it is likely that the Russians have increased the numbers of their warheads deployed above the treaty limitation.
1550, yeah.
Wow.
And so,
how'd that happen?
That's quite a surprise for all of us, right? And so, despite the fact that the Russians promised us that even though they were suspending the treaty, that they would comply with the numbers anyway.
Well, there's no mechanism in the treaty to suspend it. So,
well, absolutely,
suspension is abrogation.
Well, absolutely, and we argue in our piece here that when we continue to stay in a treaty all by ourselves, I think we use the term here that it devalues the treaty process and it demeans the American credibility, that we will sort of continue to be political punching bags in the treaty world, that we can be taken advantage of, is a bit insulting. And so we argue that it's time to get out of the treaty, at least to suspend it. There's only a year left in this treaty anyway. We're almost exactly 12 months away from the expiration.
Just pull out.
They're not following it. Exactly. So we argue that it's time to move in that direction. The second thing we argue, we must immediately suspend the retirement and dismantlement of any of our remaining nuclear warheads, both in the inactive and active stockpiles, that we've got to, and turn around and start refurbishing them. They're the only ones we have, and we've got to start getting them together, because we've got to do some other things. I believe the FY25 NDAA calls for some other things similar in that vein, as well as salvaging the B-83 and the W-72-2 weapons, so that we can prevent the dismantlement of those key systems, as well as continuing the new B-6113 that the previous administration had initiated. And then the third thing we offer here is we've got to change the posture of our forces. This includes remerving the ICBMs, the Minuteman III's that are in the holes now, back to 3 warheads. That would add about 800 warheads back into the count. Figuring out a way to renuclearize some of the bombers and putting about a quarter of the bomber force back on alert. That would include the tankers as well, as an ability to sort of salvage and survive the weapons, as well as giving the president more options should you need them after an attack. A couple other items within that reconfiguration would be is possibly taking some of the recently retired TLAM-Ns, since we don't have a SLCM-N yet, the Tomahawk land attack missile nuclear, and putting them back into some of the ships and submarines. And specifically, we call out the 4 SSGN nuclear submarines that were converted into giant cruise missile carriers, that we should make those nuclear cruise missile carriers. And by putting nuclear cruise missiles back on those submarines, you increase the at-sea potential by about 28%. And so this is, it's not anything to ignore. But this is adding force without buying new submarines, which is, a large expense in and of itself. And so by doing just a few of those things, we sort of communicate to our allies that we're still in the game, that they don't need their own nukes, and that we are ready and credible. And we communicate to our adversaries that it's a lot harder to get us. And we do have enough now to cover all of the new targets that China and others are adding to the menu that we would need to hold at risk in order to ensure a successful deterrence. And so those are the four things that we advocate for with regard to some very close-in modernization. Now we don't profess to say that they can all be done immediately and that they're certainly not free. But again, if it is a priority of the administration and of the new SecDef to reestablish deterrence, then there are certain things we have to do. It doesn't just get reestablished because you said so. You gotta have to take bold steps in order to make these things happen. And it's going to cost a few bucks, but there's likely the DOGE is going to find money. Or we can salvage it from other parts of the budget, but we can afford these things if we make it a priority. So I'll stop there and see what you all think about
that. Did you want to say something first, Jim, or did you want me to?
Well, I was going to let you pick it apart, but let me go for it first. Why not? So the article is Peace Through Strength, Enhancing America's Nuclear Deterrence Today. So on GSR, written by Curtis McGiffin and Kirk Vancher. And I want to highlight something I said two podcasts ago. So listeners, go back and listen. I said I like to look at things from the middle out. And I know Adam just, after the show, he just called me all kinds of names, thought I was just, I never took a stance on anything. And as a scientist, I just like to look at, but yeah, that was one of them. That was the kindest thing he said. But anyway, but I like looking at things from the middle and then looking at both sides. So we look at peace through strength. Well, why don't we have peace through weakness? Okay, let's think about peace through weakness and what you want to do. Most of our disarmament people really put a lot of emphasis on treaties and negotiations and such, because that's not war and that's good. So I think the one criticism I have of Curtis and Kirk is they put that up first. The fact that we want to, you know, we should go ahead and pull out of these treaties, because I think there's a flip side to this. And that is that if we follow in the article, you know, number two was warhead dismantlement. If we stopped dismantling and we began to refurbish our nuclear weapons, as Curtis suggests, we would be gaining strength, not indicating weakness. So we would show that we have strength, okay? And it's a strength that puts us in a position, a strength position, to be able to negotiate. And then, you know, adjust the posture of Americans' nuclear deterrent force to strengthen deterrence. And we do that by basically redeploying our warheads, putting ourselves in a position to negotiate from a strength standpoint, because the Russians don't have to negotiate if we are in a position of weakness. And I'll give an example here at the end. And then last, you know, you're talking about putting bombers on alert, which I've always thought was a really cool thing, not because bombers on alert are just neat to see people flying, but it is a messaging tactic that we can use to say, we put bombers on alert because you are in a position now of non-negotiation. And now we need to have the strength to bring you back to the negotiating table. So now let me go back to the START II treaty. Imagine if the Bahamas, I love the Bahamas. I think they're great. I've never really been there, but I've seen pictures and the pictures are beautiful. Why don't the Bahamas negotiate a new START treaty with Russia? I mean, Russia should want to do that. They'd be really nice to them and everything else. The reason they can't negotiate a new START treaty or any kind of reduction or hold back of their nuclear weapon forces or any kind of structural differences is because the Bahamas could not negotiate from a point of strength. They could from beauty. They could from really neat and cool stuff they can do on the beaches and places I want to go. But they couldn't negotiate from a point of strength. And that strength issue is the issue that needs to come out in all of these negotiations. We need to start from a position of strength. Otherwise, who's going to come to the table? And apparently, Russia's saying, you know, you might not be in a position of strength to us. And we need to regain that strength in order to do what a lot of people want to do. And that is have these treaties, keep us at peace, know what each other's doing because of the value of treaties. So even though I looked at it from the middle, Adam, okay, and even though you called me silly names, there's a reason you want to look at it from the middle, because you want to see what the other side would be. Peace through weakness? Try that the next time you have road rage. Just step out and go, oh, you know, I'm just the weak one, as the person's pulling out their whatever. So there you go.
Well, I would never say that. You know, just in defense of the arms control community, they would never say that they believe in peace through weakness. They believe that if you clearly demonstrate a lack of ability to harm someone, that they will therefore themselves generate a lack of capability to harm.
When's that? Tell me the last time that happened, Adam.
Yeah, but it's not weakness per se. It's not demonstrate. I'm just telling, you know, just to be fair. Them.
All right. I'm sorry. You know, I didn't mean to interrupt.
It's not peace through weakness, but it's, you know, it's not demonstrating a capability that generates fear. And therefore, you know, for them, if you generate fear, you inherently cause an arms race. And that you know, whether I agree or not is irrelevant, but that's sort of the argument they would make. Not necessarily peace through weakness. But in turning to you, Curtis, I don't fundamentally disagree with your premise or the logic behind it. What I disagree with is that we should actually do it And the reason I disagree that we should do it is because we can't even build new stuff. So I don't know how we're going to sort of upload, you know, how we're going to put new tubes in submarines, how we're going to change over combat information systems in how we're going to do the things that must be done, like in the dry dock, in the shipyard, we don't have the industrial base that can, you know, build the new stuff. So I don't want to take away one single welder, pipe fitter, anything like that to retrofit old stuff. I want if all I can do is either build new or retrofit, I want to build new.
Adam, I just want to say, I want to just cut one thing in here.
Because I
want to get the conflict going here. You say we can't do it. I don't agree with you. I say we won't do it. We are the United States of America. If we decide that we're going to put new tubes in, we're putting new tubes in. If we're going to go build a Slick-O-Man, whatever, we would do that. We did it with we had no industrial welders building submarines before we built submarines for submarine building. But yeah, my point is, you built them from nowhere. Let's just do it.
But see, that was a great day because before you had ever built them, you didn't have any environmental regulations preventing them. You didn't have all of the things that make it almost impossible to do anything. But now that you've been building submarines for 80 years, you've had 80 years to build bureaucracy, you know, the federal acquisition, the FAR, you've got everything that is suffocating our ability to train the skilled trades we need, our ability to get the manufacturing, our ability to do those things. Because if we go back and study the Manhattan Project, Manhattan was amazing what they accomplished in the time they did.
The engineers are great.
But there was nobody to stop them. And there were no rules and regulations to stop them.
So who is in charge of these rules and regulations? Who's doing these rules and regulations? Is China imposing them on us or Russia imposing? Who's telling us we have to do these things?
The federal government, mostly.
We have seen the enemy.
And he is us.
Right.
But, I mean, that's the challenge. And it's also a skill base, right? If you go to buildsubmarines.com, there's tons of jobs open for, you know, welders. And this is in part our fault, because what did every American family tell their sons and daughters? You got to go to college.
Join the Army.
You need that degree in gender studies, because a degree in gender studies is better than not having a degree. That degree in English, communications, you know, underwater basket weaving. You got to get a degree because that's what mattered. And so now we have kids who don't want to be pipe fitters and welders and electricians and all the things that lead to good careers, good jobs that are the manufacturing base. And then so when you have this constant bathtub effect of building aircraft, submarines, and all that, you sort of have a problem of your start build for 20 years, then lay everybody off, then you start wait 20 years and start from scratch. This is where we are.
I absolutely agree with that. That premise is we need to go back and look at the past and say, what put us in this position? You know, it's my standard argument in these podcasts. What put us here and what are we not going to do again? Okay, if we're going to build a workforce, we need to have a workforce that has a steady position, steady job, steady learning, steady training, steady development. We need to show people that there are careers, just like the three of us have had in our, you know, in the development within the United States. And we can do that, but we have to be able to communicate that.
All right, well, far be it for me to be the pessimist of the group here optimist. This time I'm the optimist of the group, right? So I would argue that a lot of the recommendations we have really don't require a lot of the workforce that's being used to build new stuff. I mean, uploading warheads that already exist back onto missiles is largely I suspect, done by uniformed personnel and their supporting folks in the labs. And I think, placing bombers on alert, there's a lot of logistical challenges and manpower issues, to be fair, Adam, right? Got to have the cops, you got to have enough air crews, you got to have enough ramp space, maintainers. Yeah. And we've done away with a lot of that. And so now starting to try to do some dispersal ops and sort of go back to the future is going to be a bit of a challenge. But again, I fall back on this idea that if that's the priority, we will find the forces and the resources and the ramp space to do it. And it will be done at the expense of other things that we've been doing around the world that are maybe more combat related or these sorts of things. So there's always a give and take. You squeeze the balloon, it's going to expand somewhere else. So I would argue that it's not going to take a lot of the pipe fitters and welders to change out conventionally armed TLAMs with nuclear armed TLAMs in the same holes, and we got a ton of software engineers who can fix the fire control solution. So I think we can do this at a minimal time and a minimal cost. It's not free, but at a minimal time and a minimal cost, incrementally over the next few years, if you're going to quote unquote reestablish deterrence, as the Secretary of Defense has stated. And if this is a priority for this president, who seems to want leverage in any negotiating relationship, if you got to add leverage. We have little leverage, Adam. I mean, what we have doesn't scare the adversary anymore. So we have to do more to bring them to the table. For our disarmament, arms control advocacy listeners out there, if you are a firm believer in that world, the first rule is you got to get them to the negotiating table. And no amount of cajoling is going to do that. It has to be in their national interest to do it, which means they have to fear what you can or will do if they don't get you into an agreement. And so this is where our new president is going to look for ways to increase his leverage. And I have offered four different ways in which to do that. Kirk and I have offered four different ways in which to increase that leverage so that we can begin to move in the same in that right direction, if you will. And I think the side effect of that is more deterrence, greater warrior ethos, without disrupting the modernization effort that needs to happen. Because there's no doubt about it, that still needs to happen, and it cannot afford to slip to the right anymore.
You know, I think it's going to be harder to do than anyone anticipates because, you know, let's take crew ratios.
Yeah.
We're at 0.9 crews, you know, per jet in the bomber force. We don't even have one full crew per jet. We have 0.9. And you need three crews to have any sort of ability to maintain an alert status. You got to go from, and how long does it take to build a bomber pilot navigator? That takes several years to build that crew force. So,
well,
I mean, the cops, the maintainers,
I would argue that's harder because look, in my flying days, I had to fly almost 13 years before I was allowed out of the cockpit because there was such a short amount of aviators. And there were always graybeards coming back to the cockpit in the latter part of their careers, not because it was a good deal for them. It's because the Air Force was short aviators, and so they had to reach out into the staff and bring them back, train them up, and have experienced crews again. So we've done this before. We have figured out ways. We've used reservists and guardsmen, and we have done other ways. We can increase the pilot training deal. Hey, I mean, think about it, this Adam. If we're not out fighting wars all the time, then we've got maybe have a few pilots in other airframes that we can roll over into the bomber force for the deterrent side, right? So, if we're not going to fight forever wars, then maybe we can do forever deterrence with the same crews. So it's just a matter of what's our priority.
I don't disagree, but you got to still have the, you know, the other big thing is the guns versus butter debate.
Sure.
And this is sort of what I think is great about what's going on right now is we're sort of cutting the fat because, you know, if you just look at entitlement programs in 2024, they consumed $4.6 trillion federal dollars and the federal government only brought in $4.4 trillion. So when you add on top of that debt, defense,
interest on the debt,
all of that, that's on top of the $4.6 trillion. So everything, you don't even pay your entitlement programs with what you bring in. Mm-hmm. Everything else has to be borrowed, which then makes the $900 billion debt payment, you know, even bigger. So we are going to have to fundamentally reshape what Americans think their government should do for them. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to, they're going to have to come to the conclusion that your government is not going to provide mm-hmm. your income security, your health care, your education, your everything. It needs, it's got to stop doing that and focus on its fundamental principles.
So what you just described, Adam, I would argue is harder than finding pipe fitters and welders to build submarines, okay?
Yeah,
and all the other things that need to be done. And so, you know, let's, when you look at the entire DOD budget, about a third of it is for people, right? Their health care, their pay, their retirement, their education, their living, all of that. It's people. And so out of the remaining two thirds, right, it's presumably war fighting, right? And somewhere in that is about 10% of it is our deterrence. Right. And so I'm arguing here. What I'm saying is you're making a great argument for why we should do more deterrence and perhaps less war fighting, because in the end, it's always cheaper to deter than it is to wage war. So we need to make our investment in the deterrence in war aversion so that we don't have to make more investment in actual war fighting and war execution. I'm not denying there's not a deterrent value to having a ramp full of fighter aircraft. I'm not arguing that. What I'm saying is that it is a lot more expensive to have a bunch of them than it is to have a few nuclear bombers on that same ramp space waging deterrence rather than waging war.
Yeah, let me say one other piece though to that, Curtis, and that is if you have a ramp full of fighters sitting there and they are providing deterrence, it's a lot less expensive than having a ramp full of those flying out running missions and you needing to replace some of them because of the damage done in warfare that's happening.
Well, that's
so there's an expense there.
You always pay twice when you go to war.
That's exactly right. And so, but I do want to highlight for our audience the magic of podcasting for those that have listened to us, because what has happened is Curtis says the glass is half full, and Adam is the one saying the glass is empty, if not shattered, and there's no way out. It's completely opposite than most of our podcasts, and I've enjoyed today's podcast, sitting here listening to that transformation, finally, in what's occurred with the two of you. So I'm going to back off, although I do have to also make one last comment, and then I'll leave it back to you two to close this out. But our podcast engineer has injected herself into our podcast today through our chat function. I just want to read that she thinks of the idea of peace through beauty. I just thought I'd throw that out there for maybe a future podcast. So there you go.
Well, unfortunately, none of us would win that one, right? So.
I'm a losing maybe, proposition.
Well, maybe Adam. Maybe Adam would with his golden flowing hair.
Well, you know, it's been a great discussion, as always. It's always good to have you, Curtis, and you, Jim, and to talk about something.
And it's good to have you, Adam.
Why, thank you. It's
we can't forget our host.
You know, it's funny because there was a point earlier where you said you can't be in a treaty by yourself. And of a sudden, I kept hearing that song in the background. I don't want to be all by myself.
Oh, no,
I don't know if you remember that. I wish I could have put that on.
Kimberly,
play,
scratch that, please.
So, but of course, great podcast. It's good to see you. Thanks to you, the listeners, of course. We always enjoy your comments. So, you know, you can always send us and say, that was terrible. Or say, Curtis, you were just spot on. You're so smart, Curtis. Just send it.
I love those.
You can. Those are it. Well, I think it's at nids@thinkdeterrence.com.
Right.
Where you can send your comments and questions. Right. Of course, global.
Also, security. Adam, you know, we haven't. I'm sorry to interrupt you. We haven't had this. We haven't called for this in a long time. But discussion ideas from the audience. We've had a few of those a long time ago, and we haven't had any recently. If there's something you think we should talk about, send it to us. We'd love to have a topic from the audience.
Yeah, absolutely.
But be careful. You might get invited on the podcast.
Oh, we'd love to have more guests, especially those disarmament people. I'm waiting for disarmament guests to have the courage to come on and take us on.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, Global Security Review, the Twitter.
Husey Events.
Husey Events. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff to engage with. Please do. And of course, as always, we want to remind you to think deterrence.
Thank you for listening to the NIDS View. This show is produced under the NIDS Podcasting Network, a division of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. NIDS is a 501c3 organization dependent upon donations to provide this podcast and bring about awareness of the peacekeeping value of U.S. strength and our national deterrence. You can catch all of our podcasts or provide feedback at thinkdeterrence.com. I would like to thank our producer, Kimberly Charrington, our sponsors, and all the fantastic members of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies for making this podcast possible. Stay tuned next week for another exciting and informative The NIDS View.